Hello, and thank you for joining us on this episode of The Dev Team. I'm Mark Onsman.
I'm Daryl Kilzer.
And I'm Jake Overall.
We're a group of developers and bootcamp instructors here to help you in joining the world as a software developer. Whether you're a self-taught developer, bootcamp grad, or a CS student, we're here to help you fill in some of the knowledge you need to grow in your role as a junior developer.
This week on The Dev Team, Jake starts us off with the word of the week, structs. Next, I will share a study on the code interview and discuss the impacts on the dev community. Mark will then take us into a deep dive with the five things every developer should consider when building a side project.
All right, so I want to start today's discussion off with, word of the week, concept of the week more, maybe. And it is the differences kind of between structs and classes. Structs are one of those things that as I was first becoming a developer, I would hear about them and I thought, am I missing out on something? Like, what the heck is this thing, right? And it took me a really long time before I actually understood what a struct or a data structure was actually for, especially in a language like C#. To put it very simply, a struct is an object that is passed by value as opposed by being passed by reference. And so kind of talking about the difference between reference types and value types, we talk about things like the stack versus the heap and kind of more of these advanced, more sometimes nebulous concepts, especially if you're coming to software development from, say, like a boot camp or self-learning as opposed to a CS degree. And I think that that's a big knowledge gap, right? And we're not going to be able to, of course, cover all of that in a little podcast here. But it's kind of the idea of what would be the purpose of having an object that the entire object itself is actually passed by value. And what does that actually mean?
Yeah, I think kind of one of the use cases that I've maybe come across is, of course, going back to game development, right? Getting around issues with garbage collection. And maybe a quick little note on that I discovered through, errors made there. Also make sure that none of the members or data inside of those structs are reference type as well, or you kind of negate the whole fix there. And so that's probably one of the use cases that I've come across it for is getting around garbage collection.
Yeah, I think for sure. I see structs most often used in things like video game development. And there's reasons for that, right? We talk about performance, and performance is a really big issue. And the concept behind a struct is, I have just an object that I can keep on the stack and I don't have to throw it into the heap. And that comes with its own, of course, benefits and drawbacks, and it has to do with boxing and unboxing. And of course, a lot more advanced concepts that really come into play here. And by no sense of the imagination am I saying that, like, hey, we should get rid of all of our classes and switch to structs. That would be a terrible idea. 99% of the time, especially with something like object-oriented programming, we want objects to have references, right? We want to have pointers to a single item in memory. I want, when I pass an object through a method call, to actually retain reference to that object. So I want to use something like a class. In very few instances would I actually ever want to actually use a struct, but structs are very good because they do stay on the stack. But there's that drawback is if I have a list or an array of structs and I have 100 structs in this list and I pass it to a method call, I just now duplicated. I now have 200 objects sitting on the stack, and that's definitely not a good thing.
Yeah, I think you have to be extra careful with stuff like that. And that's probably where, juniors or people who are not as familiar with it have to be aware of that, right? While these can be very useful little utilities or structures as they were, but you have to be careful when you are using them because you could very easily run into stuff like that. So they're definitely fun to play around with, but there are some pitfalls.
Yeah, definitely. I think structs can be very, very useful in something like a functional programming language, but at the same time, they can also cause stack overflows if you have too many objects that all of a sudden you try and throw onto the stack as opposed to using the heap, right? And I think it's really just a balance between what type of programming you're doing at any particular time. Structs are great in things like game development, especially when we're talking about coordinates and things of that nature. It's exactly what they're pretty much designed for. There's a lot of underlying data structures, though, that basic things like int32, you know, those things are actually structs under the hood and for good reason, right? And so I don't think it's one of those things that if you're sitting there as a junior developer and you're looking at this thing and you're like, what the heck is a struct? I think it's safe to say, like, don't super worry about it. It doesn't probably matter. And 99.9% of the time, no, you shouldn't be using a struct. So don't worry that you're doing something wrong. Continue to use classes, you know, continue to keep objects as reference values, kind of move forward from there.
Yeah, I think you touched on something there too, talking about coordinates. You know, that's exactly what I used it for, is these nodes that were really arbitrary, didn't really need to, you know, keep them around, didn't care about them in any sort of way. You know, things that you just don't commonly find in business applications. We usually care about all of our data and we usually want reference to all of that. And so that's maybe one of the big things to point out there, is you don't use it often in business applications because you care about your data.
Absolutely. Very, very true.
So coming across the news for this week, found something kind of interesting that we often talk about, the coding interview, right? A big topic for new developers especially. I think it occurs with them more often than more senior developer roles. But a study was done by North Carolina State University and Microsoft, and they kind of found that the current format of the coding interview doesn't exactly test actual skills so much as maybe like performance anxiety and things like that.
Shocker, right?
Yeah, crazy, right? Things we didn't know. And so the study was kind of conducted in two ways. Participants were either given like a coding challenge in a room by themselves where they were allotted, you know, however much time they needed to solve it, or done in another room where they did have someone in there with them kind of watching them through the whole process. So an interviewer.
The dreaded whiteboard interview.
The dreaded whiteboard interview. Exactly. They found that participants in the private room were way more likely to actually succeed at this and solve it, no issues, right? And participants that were in the room with the interviewer were like less than 50% likely to actually solve the challenge in an efficient way or an effective way and actually get through it impressively, right? One other kind of thing to note on that, of the women that they did the study on, okay, something that I thought was kind of interesting, the women that actually did this study in the room alone, 100% of them passed. And the ones that did it with an interviewer, 100% of them failed.
Wow.
So that could potentially have kind of some catastrophic results of what we're trying to do with the development industry right now, right?
That's interesting and quite frankly shocking, right? And I think there's a lot that comes into play when considering this, right? Like, go figure that the standard average developer is not going to perform well on, you know, on a stage type of idea, right? A lot of us are kind of a little more introverted. I know me in particular, right? And so, you know, yeah, a big surprise there, though, that to kind of see just a huge disparity in what are we really truly testing for in a coding interview. Do you want code skill? Do you want code talent? Or are you trying to find and evaluate, you know, performers? Because that's kind of what I'm getting out of that. That's quite amazing, actually.
Yeah, I would add to that, the big thing is one of the biggest fears of people, period, outside of like spiders and stuff, is public speaking. And so now you are putting people in a space where most commonly people, everyone, developers or whatever it might be, struggles. And so you're adding the pressure of the interview, the pressure of public speaking, and everything else going on that they have to think about outside of actual coding. And you touched on this, but the biggest thing is you're not doing that in the job. Like, unless your job is like what we do, where you're standing up in front of people teaching code, your job is not writing code on a whiteboard, talking through it as you're writing it, and doing those things. So you're evaluating skills. If you're really good at whiteboards, that doesn't mean really anything, in my opinion. So a positive in that space is almost as worthless as a negative in that space. You learn next to nothing from that type of interview style.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think as an industry, we need to be brave and figure out a different way to start testing candidates' skill levels and things of that nature. You know, there's a million other options. Putting someone in a room by themselves is often what we actually do with developers, right? Now, I get that there are some companies out there that take developers and they put them more in like a consultant role. And I do think that, yes, developers should be developing a skill in being able to communicate with each other. That is very important, right? I'm not saying that developers need to be the, you know, lock them in the basement and throw pizza at them type of personality, because that is very much not the case.
That's more of a Ninja Turtle.
Yeah, right? But I do think that, you know, let's start thinking about as an industry a different way to test skills, right? I love when companies will give you a, you know, take-home challenge. Here's a little question, build me an API or hit this API. And if you want to pass this interview, you have to send the correct payload back to some sort of server somewhere, right? And that to me is like a really fun puzzle. And that's the type of interview that, yeah, it's very easy to tell. Did someone pass or fail based upon, you know, a set of questions that you have to actually communicate with an API for?
Yeah, I think, you know, speaking on exactly what you're saying, Jake, and maybe tying back in a little bit of what Mark was saying earlier, you're putting people on the spot. And yes, they should be able to kind of speak intelligently about that. But as a consultant, you have usually had this problem for a while, you usually get to kind of figure it out first and then go present on that. When we're doing these coding interviews, and maybe that's one of the tricks to get out of this here, when we're doing these coding interviews, they're a really specific, weird, arbitrary challenge that the interviewer knows the answer to, and the person interviewing for it has nothing to do with their actual job they're going to do. And once you, if you know this specific little trick for it, it's a super easy challenge to solve. If you don't know that specific little trick, it's incredibly difficult. And so, you know, maybe to speak on what we kind of do here at CodeWorks when we're interviewing potential students, one of the ways we've kind of gone around it, I think, is we have pre-coursework that we want them to go take a look at. And we're giving them time to go through that, time to figure that out a little bit, get a little bit of the context of the challenge. And then one of the first jobs we have when we get them into that room is to try to get rid of the tension and get all the, you know, jitters out of it. I want to see the skills and not necessarily how they perform based on anxiety.
My favorite interview that I've seen, what they ended up doing and kind of conducting it in this way, and I thought this was would tell me so much more about the individual, is let me give you a piece of either broken code. So I've already written the code, but it doesn't work. Can you find out why? Or along those same lines, I want you to also not only fix it, but optimize it. Maybe it's just a couple of syntax errors that I threw in there, but it's also a really inefficient way to do whatever it is doing. And even like a real piece of code, like not just some challenge, like you said, that has some trick or unique little like, oh, well, if you do it just this one way, it's faster. But something maybe they'd face in the real world. Let me give you, you know, 100 lines of code and update and optimize this application. That's going to tell me so much more about you as an individual. One, can you debug, which is probably some of the first early stuff I'm going to put you on is some bug fixes. And two, can you recognize what is efficient code? Do you know that this thing is slow or that it's ineffective or it's a bad way to do this? It's currently putting maybe 1,000 listeners on the page or something like that. And so identifying those things to me and giving them the computer and having them talk through as we walk through and kind of solve this would tell me 1,000 more things about them than can you solve this tricky problem on the whiteboard?
I think that's great. You're giving them the context of the problem again. So maybe it comes down to some of the skills of the interviewer. Let's make sure we give them the context of the problem there.
Yeah, and you know, another benefit of that style of interview would be, you know, things like static code analysis. Do you understand, like, you know, are we using underscores here? Do we denote what that's for? Are we using uppercase, lowercase letters, right? Like all of those little things that we do care a lot more about. Whereas most of the time on a whiteboard, you know, I'm not even judging you on syntax most of the time. But then when you actually get into the code and you don't know the syntax of the language we're writing in, then all of a sudden I feel like, wait, what? Right? Like I failed as an interviewer, right? And so I think that is a much better way to actually evaluate someone's skill set. It of course just requires a lot more work up front on the interviewer, right? And so I think that that's okay, but I think that it's something definitely worth looking at, especially when we look at just the devastating numbers of what that study showed.
Yeah, absolutely. That's inadvertently ruling out almost an entire class.
I would kind of, you know, build on that, like you said, a little bit. And I think that there's plenty of people who look at the whiteboard and say, we do whiteboard challenges because it helps me evaluate how you think. And while they're not wrong, I think it is important to talk to someone and figure out, okay, how do you solve problems? As we mentioned before, it's the worst possible way to do something like that, to identify those skills. And I think that there are so many other ways that you can find out, how does this person problem solve? I've seen other interviews where they even bring in two or three candidates and say, okay, hey, we need you to solve this completely unrelated code challenge. And like, hey, I want you to figure out the most optimal time to water the grass for this golf course or something like that. We give a challenge early on in our course about, hey, here's a train schedule. What is the minimum number of tracks you need? And talk me through how you came to that
solution. Yeah, just simple logic problems as opposed to even code problems. I guess if you're testing critical thinking skills and things of that nature, I think that that's fine. But I do also think that it would be very valuable, as we pointed out before, let's test the development skills. Let's test the coding skills in an actual environment where you are expected to actually be working.
Right. And that would be my answer, though, to people who say, well, I need the whiteboard because I need to know how you solve problems. And I think that that's not true. All right. Well, I'm going to dive into kind of transition into building your portfolio and choosing side projects is kind of the deep dive I wanted to get into today. And I kind of compiled a list, and I'll kind of get your guys' thoughts and feedback on these and maybe anything else you'd want to add, of about five different things that I think juniors or seniors or anywhere in between, when you are building those side projects or even portfolio pieces, some of the things you should focus on and how you should make a decision on, what should I even build? Right? Because another to-do list is oftentimes boring and irrelevant, and it's a throwaway. You need those sometimes, but oftentimes you do want to actually build something out. So number one, the first thing I want to kind of talk about is, the first thing I would do is identify what it is you're trying to learn or what skill you're trying to demonstrate.
Yeah, I think definitely that's a good thing, right? Like most of the time when I'm going to start a side project, it's usually because, hey, there's this new shiny framework or there's this new pattern or there's this new something that I want to get experience with. So I want to go build something, right? And I personally hate that. Like it's the dreaded question of what should I build? And sometimes I will spend, 10 hours trying to figure out like, what should I build as opposed to just having built something, right? And so, I think a lot of times we do fall back into the standard to-do list just because it's so, a to-do list does pretty much tell you the standard, get, post, put, delete type of idea, the CRUD methodologies, all of that kind of come into play there, right? And a to-do list can do all those things in a very, very simplistic manner, but it is a trivial application. It's a throwaway. So let's think a little bit more on what would be a good thing to actually build.
I personally always go for video games, as you know. The first thing that I do with anything is I try to figure out how to make a game out of it. I like doing that particularly because it's hard to come up with business application or line of business type of apps that are doing that one very specific thing. Video games are just weird and they can have any kind of mechanic and you can do whatever you want with them, right? And so I'm always going to try to go and implement that kind of feature set in a video game and go for that skill. It also makes me look at it in kind of a different light. I'm enjoying what I'm doing at that moment. And so I found that if I can enjoy what I'm doing, I'm way more likely to learn that thing. If I'm building something that's super boring, I'm just trying to get through it as fast as I can and ignore as much as I possibly can.
Yeah, and I think, when you're picking that side project, it's, what do I want to build? Should be one of those very first questions. But I think what Mark was actually pointing
out. Yeah, you guys jumped ahead in my
sorry.
Notes. You're on number two.
Sorry. But what I think what the actual question was why are you picking a specific skill, right?
What are you trying to learn or demonstrate? And you guys jumped ahead, so I'll just kind of give everyone number two, and then I want to circle back. But find meaning in the thing that you created and make it your own, right? For Daryl, that's video games. And, we're trying to build a more interesting and robust application. But back to number one, right? Like, I think to-do lists are okay if you're just trying to say, let me test out, I've never used React before. Let me dabble with it, right? Or let me kind of test this thing for my own benefit. Those small apps are okay. And that's in that identifying stage. That's when you can decide, is it worth moving into this list further? Number two, identifying something with meaning, or am I just trying to learn like, hey, how does, fetch work as opposed to Axios, as opposed to Lightpath? But that said, I think that the other piece of that is if you do identify, hey, I want to be able to demonstrate this is a portfolio piece. I want to show I know how to engage with an API. That's when you then move down the list into number two of build something with meaning.
Yeah, I think, you know, to kind of circle up on both these two things, it's, you know, why are you learning something? Are you trying to advance your career path? Are you just satisfying your own curiosity? Those types of things really do matter first and foremost, right? If it's satisfying my own curiosity, then great. I'm going to build something super fun that I really love, that, you know, that I just want to play around with. And it doesn't matter if anyone ever even sees it, right? But if I'm trying to build something that is very intentionally designed to, hey, I'm looking for a promotion, or I'm looking to what I know we're going to be moving into in the next, you know, month or two, then yes, I think it's a lot more important for you to say, okay, I'm building this for this specific reason. And so I need to make sure that the next couple of things that I'm thinking about are going to be, yes, this is portfolio. Yes, this needs to be pretty. Yes, this needs to be standard convention. Yes, this needs to be, you know, follow all of these industry specific items if it's going to be some sort of like showcase piece or a portfolio piece. And I think, you know, you have to distinguish very early on, what is it that I am actually building this for? And I think that was the answer to that very first, or not answer, but what that first question actually was, right?
Yeah, 100%, right? Because ultimately, and as you identified, like, if you are just building a throwaway, hey, I'm going to build a to-do list so I can figure out, am I even interested in going into the React framework kind of thing, or Angular view, or whatever it might be. Sure, you're identifying early on, this thing does not have a large, grandiose purpose. It's not a portfolio piece. It's just for me to dabble with this thing. But on that second part, you know, find meaning in the, so number two again, find meaning in the thing you're creating. If you have found in the previous that, you know, I want to actually build a portfolio piece, I want to grow 100%, that's where you take that extra time and say, okay, how can I make this unique to me as opposed to just another, you know, accounting application?
Yeah, so maybe to kind of go back and actually answer the first question, since I skirted on to the second one there, I think it is important to identify that one individual skill and not try to take on too many different things. I think I've made that mistake so many times. Well, I'm going to learn, you know, React, and since I'm doing that, I might as well learn this other new database, and you know, I'll just tack on a new language on top of there, and just keep going and going.
And on top of that, build a video game that doesn't exist.
Build a video game that doesn't exist with really weird mechanics. Yeah, I've made that mistake so many times. But it's I think it's very important, like Mark said, go back, and I think my default now is I pick one skill. I might have five skills there that I want to learn, but I'm going to pick one at a time. I'm going to go, okay, let me get familiar with React and some of the nuances there. Okay, I've got that. Let me go get familiar with this new database. Okay, I got that. And then next it becomes, okay, how do I hook these all together? So identifying each individual skill and kind of building a smaller project and eventually working towards that final goal, I think is incredibly important there.
Yeah, which kind of leads me into part three of that is you've made your decision, you've identified the project, you know what you want to learn, you kind of outline that scope. So number three, plan, and document that plan. So I think any portfolio piece that someone builds, if you can go back at it and you have written a README with links to like a Trello board and a Figma, and you've kind of documented the process as you went along, that is going to be so much more impressive to me as an employer to say, okay, I see what you were planning initially, and I can see your progress. So you understand, you know, especially if this is like you're a brand new junior, this is your first job application and stuff like that, I can look through and say, okay, they understand the process of planning through Trello. They understand, you know, design architecture through, they're using this other tool we use like Figma as a free tool we use. Any of those kind of processes that you can identify. And then once it's launched, start using GitHub bug logging and stuff like that, so you can submit pull requests to yourself. And it really shows a maturity as a developer when I can see that plan.
Absolutely. To kind of throw kind of my own process in here, right? Like, as you were saying that, I was kind of chuckling to myself because, you know, the planning phase is one that I feel like I struggle with a lot, right? And I don't take the time necessary to actually go through and document and do all of that stuff. And you absolutely 100% should, right? And here's something that, you know, I'll throw it out there. I have notebooks full of diagrams and flowcharts and ideas and things that I sketch out. And that's my planning phase, right? And that's totally fine if you are using like a paper product or something of that nature to keep track of those, or even a whiteboard that you erase. Like, take pictures of those things and throw them in, especially if it is going to be a portfolio piece or something that you are looking for employers to look at. Keep those, even if they look like, you know, crazy sketches, take pictures, scans, whatever, document those things, or, you know, do the actual better step of convert those chicken scratch drawings or whatever into actual flowchart boxes and put those into your GitHub repo. But yeah, put them directly into your source code so that employers can see them or future people. You know, maybe you come up with some sort of library that actually you put out there and people want to actually start using. It would be great to be able to, you know, break it back down to its roots and identify why you made some of those decisions that you made, because you're not going to remember 6 months later or a year later why you chose to go a particular route if you don't have those notes.
Yeah, I think that's something that's really interesting to kind of think about. This is probably where I'm also weakest. And so you just find another developer like Mark and latch on to them, and they provide that for you, right? But no, to kind of answer that more seriously, I also have notebooks. I have notebooks in, you know, my wife's console of her truck. I've got them in my car. I've got them next to the bed, next to my recliner. I'm all over the place, right? I'm sure somewhere in there, if you flip through all the pages and maybe combine page 42 of the first one and the last page of the next one, you'll have a really, really awesome video game in there somewhere. But they're all kind of just little tools that I've created and held onto, and I can go back and reference them every new game that I'm trying to create. I maybe skip right to the wouldn't it be cool if phase and go straight for the stretch goals.
Daryl, that's my next note. You keep jumping ahead.
Oh, man. I should probably, you know, read your notes or something there. But that'd be planning, right? You got this all planned out. And so I kind of maybe skip right to the stretch goals, and I tend to skip over a lot of those early planning phases, and maybe that's why I have, you know, a GitHub full of repositories that aren't quite done yet, or have gotten to a point where I don't have a good direction to go in. And it's more of the ones that have been for line of business applications or things I've needed to complete that I've gone and gotten more serious with and said, okay, here's the plan for this. Here's the end goal. Here's that MVP. And those are definitely my more successful ones.
Yeah, I'm gonna jump in there and hopefully not steal your fifth point or whatever point we're on, but it's that concept of, or the definition of done, right? You know, and yeah, I too, I have, you know, just Git repos and tons of them. And it's like, well, here's a little mechanic that used a grappling hook for a video game. And I never built an actual video game that truthfully implemented a grappling hook anywhere else, but that doesn't matter, right? And I think that's the important thing to point out here is you don't have to build an entire Legend of Zelda or Mario or something of that nature before you say, hey, this test or this thing that I built, this side project is done. Right? Because that's exactly what side projects are they should be little snippets, take the time necessary to make that thing modular so that if I do need a grappling hook for a game later, I can go back to that repository, I can look at it, it is documented, I can see why I made those decisions that I made, and then I can pull that into my project where all of a sudden, yes, I do need that grappling hook. And I think that's kind of the more important concept there with, you know, these side projects is they don't have to be these ginormous things. Keep them small, keep them focused, do exactly what you intend to do, and then put them aside, right?
So 100%, that is number four.
Is that my bad, Mark?
So number four, beware the wouldn't it be cool if and focus on number one. So to kind of tie in what you're talking about, again, number one, identifying the skill you're trying to learn or what you're trying to demonstrate. And as soon as you've reached that point, you can close that up and tie it up and don't get into the, wouldn't it be cool if we added this and then we added this and then we added this and we added this. And now you have some crazy hacked together monolithic application that is not even remotely what you started to do. And it may be just difficult to even read through your own code and identify where is the thing I'm actually looking for. So
yeah, you've defeated the purpose of a side project.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. So that's why I did call out number four. Again, I'll let Daryl respond here, but beware of the wouldn't it be cool if, since you said that specific phrase, and focus on number one.
Yeah. So maybe there's a weird take there too. For video games, I've found that to be particularly successful in those game jams. but I think it does tie into what Jake was saying earlier. I have that toolbox, like I've got that little grappling hook and I've got this other thing and I bring them all in as, you know, assets or modules. And so there definitely is that, you know, I built this as a side project, but I did build it in such a way that I can use this in the future. And it ties into the, you know, a cool looking game. So maybe the wouldn't it be cool if is closer to a, you know, something I might use in a game jam, a non-professional setting, right? Something that's not going to become real.
I'd counter you a little bit on that and say, ultimately, what you're building there, the idea or the skill you're trying to demonstrate is I can build a game. So all those things become a part of the core of the game. It's not saying, hey, you know, we built this game, it has all this functionality. Wouldn't it be cool if that game also made me toast or something, right?
Right,
so I feel like you're pulling in to drive the focus of we built a really cool game, less of a throwing in this random stretch goal of saying, okay, cool, we got this game working, and now wouldn't it be cool, you know, if we tied a robot to it for some reason.
I agree there, right? But it's the what we started with is identify the purpose of the thing that it is that you're doing, right? Is this side project a full-fledged video game, right? Or is this side project a mechanic of a video game, right? And you have to identify those things, right? And I think that's where you're saying the wouldn't it be cool if, well, it depends, right? It depends. Is that the core functionality of the thing that you set out to build originally? Because if it's not, then make that another side project for something later. Don't just tack garbage together, because that's what I feel like we often do as developers. Focus more on that skill set of making modular code, right? Implement that idea of dependency injection. If I need to use this thing, what's the bare minimum necessary stuff I have to pass to it in order to be able to use it in some other project? And, you know, once you've done that, yes, now all of a sudden, you know, Daryl's got 100 different repositories that I go through and I sometimes look at still, quote unquote, right? And say, hey, look, I do need this grappling hook, or I need this gun, or I need this, you know, whatever thing, this little portal. And Daryl has a little GitHub portfolio piece that shows that he did this, and maybe this one might be in Phaser and the other one might be in Unity and the other one might be in something else, and that doesn't matter because the code itself is complete. And that's what you need to focus on, is, you know, code complete, not the project is done, not that the, you know, this thing is, you know, going to go out and make me millions of dollars or something of that nature. It's code complete. And I think that's what really truthfully matters when you're taking on these side projects.
Yeah, making sure it adds some sort of value to the current project and isn't just a straight cost and detriment to it, for sure.
Yeah, and then the last one, obviously, this ties a little bit more specifically to web applications to an extent, but take the time to make it beautiful and mobile friendly. So often we, you know, especially if you're working towards, you know, portfolio pieces or whatever, even if it's not a portfolio piece, that doesn't mean it couldn't easily become one. If you put in a lot of time, energy, and effort to make something really, you know, mechanically, and it's really good code and it runs really well in that aspect, great. If it's ugly and bad UI, no one's going to use it. No one's even going to spend more than 10 minutes really playing around with it, if that, before they move on. So again, that comes back to, you know, these are being, if it is a portfolio piece or if it's something even modular that you want to plug in, do that, take that time now to make it look nice, to make it work well, so that later it's already ready to almost plug and play.
Yeah, I mean, I think that step pretty much speaks for itself, right? And a lot of this depends on what it is, of course, you're building, right? But I would even say that if you are building something that's not web-based, right? If you're building something that, you know, requires a very specific piece of hardware to even work or function or to demonstrate or whatever, that's fine. You know, take pictures, document it, document the process of it, put together those like GitHub readmes, right? And build that story out of this thing. If it's going to actually be that portfolio piece, right? If you've reached all the way to step five and the thing that you've come up with is not impressive, right? If it's not the focus, if you've decided, yes, I was able to do all of this, but I actually hate it, then that's fine. It doesn't have to be a portfolio piece and you don't have to put in that final step, right? And that's totally fine. It's going to fall to the ether and no one's ever going to recognize it. No, you're never going to even look at it again, but that's okay. Sometimes we do have those projects, right? On the flip side of that, though, don't throw away tons and tons and tons of hours of work for something that you are passionate about, something that you did enjoy, something that you did like, and then just be too lazy at the end to actually document it, right? Document it so that a person who knows nothing about the topic can come to it, can look at it, can read it, you know, and say, yes, this thing is impressive. Yes, this does look cool. Yes, this is something that I want to investigate further. And yes, I'm going to absolutely bring you in for an interview because that thing caught my eye, right? That's the whole purpose of the portfolio piece. So don't spend countless hours working on something and then fall apart right in that very final step.
Yeah, I think you made a great point there, Jake, right at the end. Something I'm pretty familiar with. So know your audience, essentially, right? Ultimately, this is something you're probably building to give to a client. And when you're going to give that to the client, of course, it needs to perform well. They don't understand all the, you know, and look good. They don't understand all the under the hood stuff and things of that nature. And so that part is just not going to be impressive. If it works and does what it's supposed to do, it doesn't matter how great that code is or anything of that nature, right? That's not the part that they're going to understand or be impressed by. It's got to look good and they got to be able to use it. And it's got to be intuitive. Maybe take an example there. Building a giant world, right? And you build this world out in this video game or something like that, right? I hand it over to, you know, my wife, and she immediately tries to go up these stairs and you know, can't go up the stairs.
No, don't go that way.
So it's a terrible, terrible game, right? She's just like immediately disinterested, hands the computer back. And I'm like, but there's 400 square kilometers here to explore of, you know, you can't go in the cabin because it's just not an area you can go. But if I hand that same thing over to, like, you know, one of you guys, you know, you're immediately looking, going, oh, look at that rock. That's the most realistic looking rock I've ever seen. Look at these trees move. Look at this grass. How do you do that? How are you accomplishing all that? And so it's just knowing your audience and what they're going to be impressed by. If this is a first draft and you're talking to other developers that you're trying to get on board with this project, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect. The code may be more of something they're interested in. But before that goes to the client and the people actually using it that aren't going to know that context or have that context, you absolutely do have to focus on that. The beauty of it, right? How it actually works.
So, and of course, these are our opinions of, you know, here's the five things I came up with that I felt like were the most important things to think about when making side projects. Do you guys have anything else, other advice or things you'd add for building side projects or tackling portfolio pieces?
Just one last thing to tack in there, what Daryl was saying is it's know your audience, right? But on top of just knowing your audience, I think at this stage, it's very important that you're setting the expectations, right? You know, if you start up the video game and the very first thing that that your wife sees is a cabin, then yes, of course, I'm intended to go walk towards the cabin. And then all of a sudden when I can't go up there, it doesn't make sense, right? But if you just rotate the character 90 degrees and they're staring at a lake and you can go and explore the lake or whatever, right? Like all of a sudden, I don't care that the cabin isn't something that I can go into because it's not the first thing I look at. It's not the first thing I see. It's not the focus of the application or the focus of the thing that you built, right? And so it's your job, especially at this state in the game, to actually take the time to set the expectations, you know, so that I, as the end user, will know exactly what is expected of me to be able to go and do, right? And that I think is the trick to building a very successful side project, a successful side portfolio piece or something of that nature, is being able to set what that user expectation is so that they have a good experience with it, right? And again, you know, if you are building something, make sure that it works on a mobile phone because that's where 90% of the people are going to experience it from.
Yeah, at least make it appear complete, right? Even if it's something like, I've got all the buttons here, you can't go to this page, but when you click on it, you get this, you know, coming soon or something pops up. Just the little tricks like that, I think those are huge.
All right, guys. Well, we'll go ahead and wrap up the session here. And thanks, everyone, again for joining us on the dev team. Thank you for joining us for this episode of the dev team. If you're interested in learning more about our team or possibly starting a career in software development, reach out to us at boisecodeworks.com. Follow us on Facebook and like and subscribe to this podcast to continue to receive the latest updates. Until then, from the dev team, remember, if you want clean code, wash your hands.